Hello, folks. Welcome to the latest episode of Growth Digger. I have Sammy Hero with me today. He is a global SaaS leader who's worked across continents and multiple countries. And in fact, for the last 6 years, he is based in Finland and helping global companies not just grow, but grow exponentially. Before we get in with Sammy, I would like to give you a little bit of flavor about what Growth Digger is about. My name is Tharun. I'm the founder and CEO at Growth Natives. As a company, we're all about growth at every step of the funnel, be it through creative marketing, be it through exhaustive and innovative sales experience, and then not just about sales, but also about customer success and continued growth from your existing customers. We are a 350 people strong team that helps our customers unlocking growth potential at every stage of the funnel. And I think Sammy here, he has very similar experience as well as background. So we share a lot of synergies. I'm delighted to have Sammy. Would you like to say something about yourself before we get into the podcast?
You pretty much covered it. Worked in practically all the continents other than the North and South Pole. I used to have teams in India as well as Australia and so forth. It's been an interesting journey until now.
I'm going to ask you a tough question. What is your favorite country or your favorite continent to operate or work out of?
I really do enjoy Indian food. My trip to India, to Bay, Delhi and Goa, I love the quality of life in Finland actually, but also in Southern Europe. And then of course, US. If you make enough money, US is a fantastic country to live in. It just works well.
Yeah,
and of course, now we have the elections, so it'll be...
People are voting right now. That'll be an interesting outcome. The U.S. is a great country, and especially if you're in the B2B SaaS or technology business. There's a lot of action happens there. That said, there's often enough action happening in Europe as well, but it is usually very regional or country-specific. And I'm very fortunate to have spent about 15 years of my career in the U.S. And just like you, I worked in the B2B technology and SaaS space from 97 to 2012. I was there at the advent of the internet, and then I was seeing everything in between, and now we are at the cusp of AI taking off. So waiting for that second revolution to happen. Let's talk about the past a little before we talk about the future. In the podcast, in Growth Digger, we love to talk about interesting growth stories. What would you like to share from your life in terms of something interesting that happened that you had a role to play in that fostered a lot of growth?
Growth is really interesting because on one hand, I've worked in very large corporations. And when you're working in a large, like a multi-billion dollar business, we're celebrating like 4% growth, not 40 or 400, but 4%.
Yeah.
Because in absolute dollars, it's still a lot of free cash flow.
Yeah. And
on the other hand, when I moved to Finland, I came here as a COO for a company called Happy or Not. It's used in physical spaces to measure customer experience with the four smileys. Tablets and buttons,
you used to see them at the airports. And
at airports, I've seen them in doctor's clinics.
And we had a grew massive trajectory going up. And then that pesky little thing happened called the pandemic.
Oh,
it was fascinating in a bad way to see how 90% of our new business went away within the span of 6 weeks. I'm an internal optimist. I was thinking, okay, by the end of Q4, the pandemic's going to be over. And 2020, we were talking to our airport customers and they predicted it quite accurately. They said it's going to take 2 years before they are back to pre-pandemic levels. And it literally did take that. 2020 was bad. 2021 was bad. And then 2022, things started to get closer to normal. But during that time, we had to reinvent the growth. You go up and then you go down and then you start to rebuild.
Did you guys pivot during that time? Or did you guys just hunkered down and waited for better times? What was the strategy?
We did a couple of things. Our core business kind of went away. The airports, train stations, major malls, the stadiums in the US, we gave our customers a break. We said, don't cancel the contract. You don't have to pay until you can reopen. Hold on to the devices and the subscription. You can still access the old data and then we'll see what happens. And we started also innovating. We produced different kinds of coatings like the silver,
some level of protection based.
There was some level of protection, but some customers were still afraid of anything that you would touch. But we decided to focus heavily on the types of places that stayed open and still had people. Funnily enough, we even did quite a lot of business with the marijuana dispensaries. Silver-based coatings for some of the devices so that they were much easier to clean.
What?
They operate, if you go to the U.S., in some states, it's completely illegal in the U.S.
Mostly,
they operate like pharmacies or Apple stores. So they are high-end, great service, and they care about the customer experience.
One of my friends, he was in Thailand. And Thailand has always been like an anti-drug. They had very strict policies, but they've opened up to marijuana as well. So there are a lot of marijuana dispensaries that open up across Thailand, which I was surprised. I never thought they would ever do that.
My colleagues in Finland were not super excited about it because it's illegal in Finland. And in many places in Europe, it's still illegal. And we shouldn't be doing that or at least not talk about it. But then focused on gas stations, convenience stores, pharmacies, and we managed to get back to growth, not at the same clip as we were pre-pandemic, but we managed to turn the business around.
That's great. I was in a very similar boat. I started my business in October of 2019. That's when we started Growth Aid. I started with a team of six people. We were full stack, full funnel from day one. And by March, the team had grown to about 32 people. Then came the pandemic and everything was shutting down. A lot of companies were laying off people. A couple of people from the team came to me and said, as a team, we feel very strongly about what we're doing, but if you have to, don't lay off people, just cut salaries. My answer back to them was, we're not going to cut anybody's salaries, but I do want you guys to work twice as hard as you were until last month. Long story short, we did work hard. I was very blessed to have an amazing starting team that I had. But by the end of 2020, we had 130 people in the organization. We added almost 100 people in the next 9 months because we put our minds to the fact that we're not going to let COVID come in the way. We will look at opportunities. It was easier for us because we were in the business of digital transformation. So a lot of companies were trying to be more digital. Every business had to have a digital presence. Every business had to think about direct to consumer or ways to approach the consumers without getting in physical contact with. So it really helped foster growth for us. But I can imagine for you guys, it must have been so tough because what you were selling required physical contact.
Of course, we also had like widgets to add it to your e-commerce site and things like that, which helped us along the way. But it required us to rethink the go-to-market model. We couldn't exactly pivot the product because the product was what it was.
What was?
Of course, we did things with the tablets. We enabled the camera so that you could use fingers to explain. So you didn't have to actually press the tablet. You could demonstrate with your fingers. Then we started doing demographics as well, like capturing quick video of the person going by, and we could explain the demographic values and if they are happy or not while passing. But yeah, it was really interesting because the pandemic created massive opportunities for digital leaps. Some countries, Saudi Arabia, went from very few people doing e-commerce and credit cards into a massive leap. Everybody was ordering food into their houses and they were paying.
There was a 10x leap in e-commerce adoption in under 12 months. In the 6 months following the pandemic, there was 10 times more e-commerce happening globally.
And then we did all the remote work. If you wanted to hire people in India or some other country, you had to create a subsidiary for your main company.
Yes.
And then all these employer record EOR companies like Remote.com, Deel and others, they were popping up everywhere.
Didn't matter where you were, as long as you get the job done.
The attitude changed in the companies is we used to think, I like to hug my developers or I want my marketers close to me. And then it was like, I don't care where they are. There is good talent exists everywhere in the world. So just pick up the best talent.
And I think that's an excellent point because I think that's something that companies have realized during pandemic. That talent is more important than location. And it doesn't matter where they're located. If they can work seamlessly with you, then it is. So, Sammy, any other interesting, this was the pandemic story, which I think is like fascinating because you guys are in such a tough space. I can't even imagine surviving that. But any other stories from your past, which you would like to share?
I think one of the super interesting thing about growth, and people used to talk about growth hacking as well, is the continuous testing and the growth mindset. It's not enough to say, I want to do some growth hacking, but you also have to figure out where are the people who are intellectually curious and willing to fail fast. So test a lot of things. And when I was still in the US, we used to do a lot of testing, even on our print direct mail. We were selling a lot to nurses and physicians in the United States. We would have easily 17 different versions going out. We always had the control, which was our current winning piece, whether it was email or physical mailer. Then we had a whole bunch of different versions. And we're all constantly testing the conversions and experience people clicking on the website and converting from a physical activity or vice versa. How many touches you have to do. It's really interesting because tail end of the pandemic, for B2B subscription, you would need 20, 30 touches for a $50,000 subscription. And I was just reading recently a research where they were saying that for roughly 50 to annual contract value, you need nearly 1,000 impressions and something like 75 touches before you even actually get to a conversation. And then you end up having more touches as you go through the sales cycle.
Yeah,
it's hard for us nowadays.
It is tougher, and it's also very tough to do proper attribution and figure out what's really working. You're absolutely right. Because people like have a deeper digital life than before the pandemic, everybody's spending more time on social media, everybody's spending more time on their handheld devices. You really have to get into their customers' digital space, impressions, interactions, and then even with the interactions, you have to keep up with managing that interest that they have shown and then continue pushing them into the funnel so that eventually they can become your customer. So I think the journeys have become harder to understand. It used to be the 20-odd touches that you needed. It was also like defined success paths. It used to be 2 or 3 or 4 different success paths that you could define and try and push your customers in that direction. But now the number of success paths increased so much. It's really getting more and more important to really understand customer behavior, the customer journey, all the touch points. What are the most meaningful touch points? What are the things that are really helping you with those final conversions and moving the deals forward?
I've practically given up on trying to figure out attribution. It's because of the complexity. I'm a big believer nowadays in this approach where marketing, sales, and customer success work super closely together. We're more focused on the outcomes. How many new deals, what kind of ARR we're getting, what is our net retention rate particularly, so that not only are we signing new ones, but we control the churn and keep expanding. We do a bunch of activities, track more on the engagement. It's nearly impossible to figure out attribution if you have 30, 40, 500 impressions in different channels. Which one is the one that actually triggered some activity, yes, right?
You mentioned a very important point. Marketing, sales, customer success, and customer support working together. How have you enabled that? Because typically, companies, it's always marketing versus sales, and sales versus customer service, and customer service versus, it's like, marketing is not bringing enough quality leads. Customer service is always complaining that sales is just about selling, and they don't care about whether it is something that we can service or implement. And then it's like kind of that vicious circle. How do you bring these three teams together?
The way I see it is that it depends on the metrics and the goals, like kind of objectives. I'm a big fan of the OKR model, the objectives and key results.
Yep.
I'm also a big fan of having very few objectives. Ideally, if you have more than 3 objectives, some of them tend to be forgotten, right? If everybody shares the common objectives, net new deals, net revenue retention, and maybe something else, that way marketing, sales, and customer service are working together because they're all measured of the same numbers. And the saying is that what you measure, you tend to get, and what you measure and reward, you get consistently. What it does require is either a chief revenue officer who understands the 3 dimensions of the thing, or a CEO who has a chief commercial officer and so forth.
He's consistently enforcing that behavior, and it's really about stringing everybody together.
Some people use outsourced meeting booking services like VidCall, and you pay them for the meeting booked. And that tends to be a terrible metric because then you get all kinds of random meetings, right?
Yeah.
But if you figure out that you actually start paying them more, but you pay them on the outcome of what happens afterwards, then it becomes a common goal that everybody tries to advance.
Yeah, I think companies that are output focused tend to be more successful than companies that are purely input focused.
Or activity focused.
How many calls did you make, or how many hours did you spend in the office? That has no meanings to the results that an individual or a team can. If you create metrics that are output focused and that output is aligned across teams, like you said, the objectives, if you have objectives that string everybody together, then it becomes a lot easier because then everybody's marching, everybody's in sync, everybody is playing that role that they're supposed to play in the overall picture.
Yeah, exactly. And there was somebody said once, and it stuck to me, is that never mix activity with outcomes. And like a lot of the root of all evil is that silo metrics mentality is that how many leads did you generate without any question about the quality or the conversion into actual sales qualified. And then the sales reps, like you said, will go and sell something which is not strategic to the company, but it's just important for them to make the number. Then they will churn a year after because it was the wrong kind of account. And then the customer success is upset because their metrics are now screwed up.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So that's my career, I've worked at 7 different B2B SaaS companies. And every one of them, the challenges were similar. Selling into different markets, different products, different types of buyers. But at the end of the day, it's really important to not just foster growth at the top of the funnel by having some meaningful interactions or getting some leads and pipeline going for the sales team. It's really about managing customer expectations and delivering a superior customer experience throughout the funnel.
Right. And every touch point should be somehow positive that engages them in a way that it nudges them a little bit further down towards the goal.
And it doesn't stop at the bottom of the funnel. To me, the funnel is not just a funnel. It's actually an hourglass. You have leads at the top, then you have people that are prospects, then you have actually sold to. But then beyond that, they have a life as well. You can upsell, cross-sell, they become references, they become your best salespeople. If you have a referenceable customer base that is actively referencing you or sending leads to you, that is your best sales engine that you can create.
100%, 100%. And at the end of the day, this is a team sport, right? It's a little bit like a soccer team where the striker probably makes the goal, so they get all the glory. But without the rest of the team supporting and driving the game forward, none of that wouldn't happen.
Exactly. The goalkeeper is one of the most important because he's also preventing others to actually scoring goals on you. It was great chatting with you. I think our listeners would have some takeaways in terms of how to survive in a downtime, how to not give up, but hunker down. Put yourself in the customer's shoes. Like you said, you offered your customers, continue using the products. It's okay. Don't pay for the time that you're going through this tough phase, but eventually they will rise above. And once they're back, they're back. And like you said, with the travel opening up and the airlines and airports flocked with people, as soon as things opened up, I'm sure it would have opened floodgates for you guys as well, because everyone would be wanting to measure customer satisfaction as well.
Well, in some shape or form, you need to track everything. And whatever you can measure, you can improve.
So, like I said, it was great having you. I'm sure our listeners must have learned a thing or two. Maybe another day, we'll catch up again. We're running out of time here. Thank you for being a wonderful guest and being on the show.
Thanks for having me.